Quick update, I'm launching a new course for 2025. It's Foundations of Application Security. It's a two-day bootcamp covering everything you need to become a well-rounded AppSec practitioner. There's both public and private courses available, and the best part about it all is taught by me. So if you're interested, just send me an email, call@galahcyber.com.au, or say hi on LinkedIn if you can have a chat about it.
Hi, I'm Cole Cornford, and this is Secure It, the podcast that dives deep into the world of application security. In this episode, I chat with Nathan Morelli, Head of Cybersecurity and IT Resilience at SA Power Networks, which is the sole electricity provider for the entire state of South Australia. Making sure that 1.7 million people have electricity is a pretty important job. And I really enjoyed Nathan's perspective on cybersecurity and resilience.
Behave like a breach has already occurred, minimize the impact of that. That's pretty critical to our operational model, is that we are prepared for a bad day. We have incidents, we just lessen the impact of them so that we maintain critical systems, so that we maintain the service we give to customers as an organization, and our people value that in us.
We chat about how Nathan uses financial management skills in his role, the Australian government's updates to the Essential 8 and National Six Shield cyber strategy, the importance of work-life balance, and plenty more. So let's jump right on in. And Nathan, we're live. How are you going, mate?
Good, thanks. How are you, mate?
It's been a good day. It looks like it's going to finally start raining outside. I am keen to go and swim in my backyard pool with the rain going down on me.
Oh, I'm jealous of your backyard pool. I am jealous.
I would love a pool. I feel like everyone in Newcastle has a pool and everyone who's outside of Newcastle doesn't.
Yeah. No, I do feel that with, like, on my street, I've got three houses around me and all have pools, but I don't have holes in the fences yet.
Ah, yes. You got to just make friends with all your neighbors. I mean,
yeah, I do.
Anyway, off of pools, yeah. Let's move on to the most important question of all,
yeah.
Which is it's inspired by what we believe at Galah Cyber, which is that I like that Galahs are, you know, bright, colorful, and obnoxious. And I really wanted to, you know, have that as my company branding, because most of cybersecurity is like dark and scary and unapproachable. So that's the kind of bird that I am. What kind of bird are you?
Yeah, as a long time listener, first time guest, I actually had to go and think about, you know, what kind of bird I am. So I just went straight to Google and did a survey on what kind of bird I am. And it was an Australian survey, because I don't really personally know what kind of bird I am. So, and it came back as I am an Australian white ibis.
Oh.
So I'm basically a bin chicken.
You're a bin chicken.
Yeah. But the traits of that, I felt actually really respected who I am. So proud, loud, strong and brave. Sometimes misunderstood, but very loyal to my friends and very supportive of those people around me. So I thought, like, actually, I'm probably a white ibis. If I'm going to be a bin chicken, then embrace the bin chicken and the values that they have.
It's not that you just have a really long protrusion that's very good for just like drinking and slurping up all of the log files, right? That's what we call it nowadays, right?
Yeah. Maybe previously, like, we could equate this to a seam. Sure, we could, but not anymore. I leave that to the experts in my team, and I just get out of their way now.
So that's probably a good way to move across. So what do you do nowadays, and where did you come from?
Yeah, so I've had... In talking to other people about your career journeys, when you speak about it, I've had a pretty, what would almost be a traditional career journey. I graduated from university into a graduate role at KPMG as a graduate consultant in their risk area. So, you know, my basis of learning was auditing and risk and understanding how organizations manage that and where you found gaps. Lucky enough to be given an opportunity in their penetration testing team about a year in. So again, a very traditional move, early pen testing. Spent 2.5 years in their pen testing team breaking stuff and learning about the impacts of that to organizations, which was good. And then I've moved through many security operations roles, a lot of time at utilities, SA Water, Origin Energy, some time at universities and in education, at Department of Education, Uni of Adelaide, some government time at DPC, returned to EY as a manager then. And that was good fun. Learned how to manage people and budgets and learn the finances and the sales bit. Spent a decent amount of time at Naval Group Australia as well, when they had the contract for submarine builds, and as their cybersecurity lead, trying to help the French understand Australian standards and how to build for them. And that was good fun. I spent a lot of time with some friends that are still at Lockheed Martin Australia now, and we had a really good time traveling through France. Travel got a bit much, and then I was looking for another opportunity, which is how I landed at SA Power Networks is their head of cybersecurity and IT resilience, where we help the organization manage cybersecurity risk, prepare and be prepared for outages, incidents through the resilience part of our capability, and in general, lead a team of very high performing, very successful professionals and get them the tools and the finances and the support that they need to deliver the best that they can deliver. And at the end of the day, we support systems that effectively and efficiently manage the power for our state. So it's a critical infrastructure. It's pretty essential to everybody in South Australia. So really good to be a part of an organization that has a real tangible value to people as well.
Did you work with the Elon Musk like super battery thing, whatever it is? Is that part of your, do you have to care about that?
our role in that is to ensure that that is taken into account when we manage supply of electricity throughout the state. So we didn't directly have a part to play in it. Was it a result of a massive outage? And does that help in a massive outage next time? Yes, it does. It plays a really good role in that energy market management piece. So we don't have anything to do with it. We do have a lot to do with Tesla because there are a lot of Tesla batteries on houses. And as an organization, what we're trying to enable in this energy transformation and further electrification at homes is integrating those assets and those capabilities back into our network. You take SA Power Networks back 200 years, traditional coal-fired power station, power from there, big power lines that are run by Electranet to SA Power Networks as a distributor to a home. Now we've got power on the edge. We've got smaller organizations with massive solar farms. You've got solar and batteries that consumers are investing in. So we've got to be able to take that excess power and redistribute it. So now we're building a two-way network. So Tesla and their batteries and their power management systems and their cars have a big part to play in that as well. So no, didn't have anything to do with the big battery, but we have a lot to do with Tesla every day as well.
Yeah, cool. And that's really cool that resilience is a big part of your job description, because I see a lot of people in cybersecurity, they stick to compliance, they stick to hacking and penetration testing, but ultimately organizations care about the outcome of a cyber incident. So, and that outcome could be system outages, it could be theft of IP, it could be a threat to human life. It just depends on what kind of industry you work within.
Yeah.
But resilience is often the way that we resolve a lot of these kind of problems, right?
Yeah. And that concept is pretty strong across cybersecurity. It's not if, but when. It behave like a breach has already occurred, minimize the impact of that. That's pretty critical to our operational model, is that we are prepared for a bad day. We have incidents. We just lessen the impact of them so that we maintain critical systems, so that we maintain the service we give to customers as an organization. And our people value that in us. And it's probably why we own IT resilience, is a lot of outages are usually from cybersecurity incidents in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Other than a few massive Azure outages that were because of electricity going off and air conditioners not turning back on.
Or BGP route updates.
BGP routes, yes. Yeah, there was those ones too. So yes, as a cybersecurity capability, we're usually pushing for the BCP, we're usually pushing for the DR, pushing for the backups to be tested. So it makes sense where you've got that traction to just bring the other capabilities along anyway, because the outcome is the same. Having good DR and good backup recovery procedures and good segmentation for cyber, for operations, it's the same. And if you're working together on it anyway, don't label it anything different, just work together and achieve that outcome. And that's the approach that's worked really well for us here.
And I think that's a really good way of looking at it, because like blast radius of like an incident, and also having your cybersecurity program attached to other parts of the business, like fundamentally aligned to what the business is trying to achieve. Oftentimes I see them completely at odds, and it's like, why are we doing these cyber activities? And it turns out because someone knows how to do that activity. It's not because it has any meaningful contribution to managing a risk that the organization has. And so obviously Power Networks care quite deeply about power outages. So anything you can do to stop those from occurring or lessen the impact of those, while if that impact comes from a cybersecurity incident or whether it comes from just like, I don't know, someone accidentally running over a transformer with a bulldozer in the middle of God knows where. Seriously, it could happen.
It can.
Let's think about my threat model and your threat model. It's weird. So.
Yeah. That's okay.
I live in Newcastle, but I see a lot of stupid mining incidents out here. So,
yeah. Well, yeah. We go back to threats. One of the threats to power provisioning is theft of copper and people just stealing the essential cables that connect things together. So yeah. There's a risk to human life there because they can be live and they can be quite dangerous. And there's a risk to supporting human life, because if you break a power station and we don't have the resilience in the network, from a network point of view, not from a cyber, but from an operational technology point of view, then we're unable to provide essential services, which is not a great outcome. So yeah, resilience is pretty critical, whether it be from a technology point of view or from a physical asset point of view. And the way that network self-manages itself is really important too. So those resilience objectives are pretty core to how we deliver services as an organization.
I think one thing you mentioned earlier that was like cool to me was that you take a lot of pride in working for your company. And I know that I run my own consultancy business, and the types of clients I'm going to take, obviously there's the smaller businesses, but the ones that I love taking are where the challenge is just astronomical and it affects real people. You know, that's to me what we can have meaningful impact on people with. I don't want to go out there and just only work for like all the small tech startups out there that no one's heard of and no one's done anything, even though they're probably, for a software security, one of the most important areas because their entire business is software. Hmm. But people don't know what these companies are. And it, if they go offline, it doesn't really have any measurable, meaningful impact on people.
Yeah.
You talk to a university, you're affecting the ability for researchers to, you know, commercialize their ideas. You're talking to students and their ability to, you know, get educated and like access school systems, and that's just your university. But like this critical infrastructure, telecommunications, superannuation, finance, government, all very important. I'm very proud to work for those places.
Yeah, and same. And what I've learned over my career is an organization's mission has to resonate well with me for me to actually be engaged and over-deliver to be a high performer within an organization. And I've learned that along the way. Like some positions I've chosen in the past have been about working with somebody, which is a good idea too. But higher up I've gone, I'll be more solo in my work and choosing maybe one person to work with rather than a team. Its mission's become really important. And I probably learned the most about mission at my role at Department of Education, where you're looking after systems for schools. And public education historically doesn't have the funding for everything that they need. So you go out to I value face-to-face interaction with the people that I'm providing a service for. So I visited two principals a week from the first year I was there, and we would have a conversation with the principal and we would say, you're not doing these cybersecurity things very well. And most of the time, we'd be like, I don't have the budget and I'm making choices. And they're making choices in between fences or gates to protect their children, to protect their students, or some kind of piece of technology that I'm saying should be in there, or cybersecurity is raising a risk around. It's like, well, that kind of, it brings you back down to earth and it reminds you of the mission and the most important things to your customer. So when you kind of, you go through that journey, you're like, mission is really important. And if I can get the mission well ingrained in the way I operate, then I will deliver better outcomes for my organization. And I will be, you know, more fulfilled as a human being as well, because I know I'm contributing to something.
I think that's funny because I'm going to be working for a school in the near future. And One of the things that I remember their IT guy came to me was, he was like, everyone wants multi-factor authentication, but how do we give YubiKeys to 1.2 thousand people in high school? And I'm like, you don't. This is a risk you accept. Like these students they're going to need access to DT. They're going to need access to these systems. You do not give them YubiKeys, and you don't give them multi-factor because phones are banned anyway. Like, come on, this just is not the right scenario.
No. Yeah. And that's about controls for purpose, right? Like, what are you really protecting at a school? Like your main double downs are about stopping them from looking at bad stuff on the internet.
Yep.
Stopping them from downloading bad software that takes the systems out that they need to use. And being able to detect and respond to malicious activity, well, it might be threat actor led or it might be insider threat led either. You know, that's where you've got to double down in schools. Like multi-factor authentication does not prevent any of that. The threat modeling has got to be better. And I understand that there is a need for minimum baselines across different organization types, but you've also got to understand your threat first and then work towards that, which gives you a better outcome for your customer, like you're talking about, or for your part of your day job.
It seems like a lot of cybersecurity professionals always operate in like a utopic kind of plan. So this is where we want to be. This is what perfect looks like. And if I had the resources of Facebook or Google, I'm sure that I would get there. And then you say, well, actually you work for a small kitchen cabinet manufacturer in Cardiff and you build 30 kitchens a year. You don't have Facebook and Google's resources. What should you do?
And that is an immense challenge, because they're the organizations that make one little mistake, click the link, give away their username and password, and they're the ones that are getting the $3 million ransom or the $30,000, whatever it might be, on average for a small like that. And that is the difference between their organization continuing and their organization not continuing. And they're the ones that are going to get impacted the most by cyber criminal gang. So what do we do as a society around helping them be protected better, helping them lean into larger protection systems? How do we empower a Microsoft to say, you are of this organization type, you are just going to have these controls on by default? And I understand that's going to impact your business processes just for a little bit, but you have no choice, because this is what will save you from a bad day. You don't understand the why. You don't need to go to 3 ACSE forums to understand the why. It's just forced upon you. That's got an element of force, but how else are we going to do this as a whole country? How are we going to make that change?
And I think that it's worth looking at like recent changes and a couple. I like going to disciplines that aren't cybersecurity and seeing what they do, right? Because you can do parallels across them.
Yep.
And one that came out yesterday that I think was really interesting was the updates to financial advice, because and I know this sounds really stupid, but we had the Hayne Royal Commission 6 years ago, whatever.
Yeah.
They basically said all banks are evil. Banks can't do advice because banks have conflicting interests to sell wealth products for whatever, and lots of bad stuff coming out of it.
Yes.
And so banks divested away from wealth, and financial advice was incredibly professionalized, and it became really difficult because the barrier to entry to get into providing financial advice and the burden for doing it made it astronomically difficult for people to get decent, high quality advice, right? And so what ended up happening is the bottom 90% of people just never received any financial advice whatsoever. So they started going to TikTok and to YouTube and just grabbing whatever they could off the internet. And I feel that there's parallels if you think about cybersecurity, because yesterday they actually said, well, we still want to have it professionalized. We're going to relax the requirements for doing so. And we're going to make it easier for people to move into providing financial advice and to make it plain English instead of like complex forms, and look at just different ways to make it less of a barrier of entry to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder whether in cybersecurity, which I think is in a similar boat, because like to get a penetration test, you're in the ballpark between $16,000 to $40,000. For an SMB, that's enough a cash flow hit usually to just say, no,
we're done.
We're never going to participate in even just getting a pen test, let alone like a proper full-scale audit or like some kind of strategy or even buying any of the products to get up to speed, right? So I wonder whether there's going to be something that's going to come to market to help with that. And another one might be like work health and safety, right?
Yeah.
So no one did WH&S until there were like criminal liabilities associated with getting it wrong. So I wonder whether we might be seeing that if there is a risk to human life from cybersecurity, whether we and criminal liabilities and penalties be associated with that, we might shift behavior for SMBs who just otherwise might not care. So yeah, different parallels.
there's elements that in the recent Sochi updates, there's elements of those criminal things happening to larger organizations. What I did see yesterday, I do follow the Dryboss organization a lot because I really like what they're doing. And they, for smaller than, I think it was a 100 million turnover critical infrastructure utilities kind of areas, they were offering their product for free. I'm guessing that they probably leaned on some kind of federal funding for that. But those kind of programs need to have a little bit more emphasis and support to give people access to tools at a price that they can afford. Free is good, but you've still got to do something with it. I understand that. But those kind of things for smaller organizations would be of more benefit than some of the programs that are out there right now.
Yeah. Although that said, we do have the Six Shields update. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I was at the ACSE when the last version of the cybersecurity strategy was released.
Yep.
And sure, the themes are great. It's about delivery on those themes. What I don't like, and I think that this is just my personal opinion of politics in general, is first we bag the previous person. The previous person that was in the role, we bagged them. They did nothing. Here's what we did that's brilliant. Forget about what was done. Like what the ACSC delivered on the last cybersecurity strategy was the beginnings of this too. And that's not, that was never really acknowledged. And I know that's politics.
Mm.
But I opened up the Adelaide JCSC, and that was one of those shields, right? How do we build collaborative environments where organizations come in and give us feedback and we can work with them? well, we built some very nice centres in the centre of Adelaide, and we did communications around that. Like, we've done that. Okay, what's the next phase of it? Well, that's kind of what they're trying to do in the next phase of the strategy. So, yeah, the six shields, it's a very good marketing. Yep, great bundling of objectives. Really keen to see what happens next. Big organisations are probably pretty well taken care of with, you know, critical infrastructure centres work with Home Affairs already. So it's about medium and small, and there's a good focus on that.
Yep.
Again, keen to see delivery, because there's no accountability in there. There's no KPIs. There's no check back in with us in 6 months' time. We'll tell you how well we've done on this, because they're all fluffy, unmetricable things.
Yeah.
That kind of strategy wouldn't suit, like it wouldn't float in an organization I'm with, because I can't report on it. I can't show value for money and investment or return on that, because there's nothing deliverable.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I guess like it just depends on what is the outcome, what is the purpose of why they would release this kind of strategy, right? Is it to align Australians to have a shared vision about where they need to be going to in the future? Is so, like, in which case it's a effectively propaganda or marketing material to try to get people the same view about how to move forward. Effectively, this is a North Star.
Yeah.
Just like, this is the general way that we're going to angle our ship. And then maybe there's going to be like individual operationalization plans in the future. But I don't think that we're going to actually see that. If anything, I reckon it'll just be the Big Four that might.
Yeah. That might. Yeah. And some other larger consultancies. Yeah. It is built for that.
Yep.
Unfortunately. And then you kind of look at their, okay, Home Affairs, they've got a strategic role. That's great. There's a bunch of allocated funding to it. That's great. But then the posture of federal and state governments and their agencies, the security posture of them, are lagging behind. So is this the right place to be spending taxpayer dollars? Or should we be reinvesting this money in helping those organizations get resources, get protections in place so that they can better protect the government's data anyway? So there's that conversation that we have as leaders as well. It's like, well, that's a lot of money to spend on that element. What about the other elements that are critically underfunded that we know they are as well? And the results are showing that as well. How long have we been reading National Audit Office reports that say top four from 15 years ago still isn't being met above maturity level one across 80% of federal government agencies? Well, that's not for want to trying to improve. That's resourcing and funding.
And I guess, like, that's maybe not even a cybersecurity problem, because again, it goes, a lot of those top four issues are IT quality problems, right? Because you have, just like patching operating, like, I'm not great at remembering these, but patch operating systems, patch applications, ensure, restrict admin privileges and turn on MFA. Is that right?
MFA and application.
Application
wirelessing, application control, as it's called now.
Yeah. Yes.
As part of it too. So four great controls to reducing risk.
But
they are mostly hygiene.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of it's because the breadth of what people have to do is so complicated. It's like there's just too many things that people need to like work out how to do, and who's even accountable to own these kind of things. And the old software systems, or even just like, you know, computing systems in general, just are not set up in a way to be responsive to just even the patching cycle that we anticipate nowadays.
Mm.
Like last week, or maybe a few weeks ago, the Essential 8 was updated. And I think the most important thing to me was that patching cycles got halved across the board, basically. They said everything needs to be done in, you know, 48 hours, down to 24, 2 weeks to one,
yep,
4 weeks to two.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, we still can't even get people to just to do basic.
Yeah, we can't get people to patch a critical high patch today. Like, let's just focus on that as well. Like, you go through Citrix, NetScaler incidents, Deeping World being one of them.
Yep.
And then, you know, the government taking the opportunity to smash them. Like, we told you about that. You should have done better. Well, yeah, but do you understand that business? And do you understand the technology that was supporting? And yeah, we can all sit here and poke and point the finger and say you should have done better. But we're not in their shoes. We don't understand their situation and what risk they're currently holding and their appetite for that kind of change. Patching isn't easy. Patching critical systems is not easy. There are impacts for it. Can you afford them? That was their decision. And sure, four-day outage of ports is not a good outcome. And hopefully that helps them justify further investment in the future to do that. But also, returning to full output on day four is pretty resilient too.
I feel like also, like, I don't like leadership where you do like a blame culture. I like to live a blameless postmortem.
Yep.
Where ultimately we have like gaps in process and policy, control weaknesses, people that weren't educated or whatever. But ultimately it's not this person made a mistake or this organization's a problem. It comes back to the, okay, well, something went wrong. Now let's think about, are we going to go try it? Like, I think there's a lot of knee-jerk reactions a lot of time to these kind of incidents. Like, risk is managing uncertainty, right? And unfortunately, things do happen that we don't plan for. And even if you say you got a 1 in 100 chance over 100 years, it will, that risk is, you know, I guess it's a bit of a fallacy, but it's likely to occur once, you know?
Yep.
So, like a global pandemic, I know a few people have told me that they stripped global pandemic off of their risk registers in 2018. Which is hilarious to me personally. So.
Yeah, but it did accelerate a lot of digital transformation in organizations and collaboration and tools and be comfortable with working from home and all of that. Dispersed workforce advantages as well. So, yeah. We're all still here.
I think that's a great thing, though, like, because if we can help businesses move away from, like, because like the investment, you need like capital expenditure to modernize some kind of systems or to at least like, I guess a lot of people are used to, I spend money, I get outcome. Whereas with a lot of software, it's effectively OPEX, you know? So if you're trying to like think about patching, you don't build a project to patch something and it's patched and it's good. And then the pace at which we need to be patching systems nowadays is that there's probably 5 CVEs per application per day indefinitely from now on, right?
Yep, it's relentless.
Improving the ability for people to, like, I guess, the time frames for shortening how long it takes to update systems significantly by just introducing more modern engineering practices, I think that's a really good thing. And also that doesn't come out of cyber's budget. So because that's another thing I keep hearing out of you is like going back to the finances thing is I constantly hear from a lot of professionals, whether they're like senior executives or even junior employees, who just say like, I never have budget to be able to achieve anything. And so I'm constantly bitter and angry and upset and the world sucks and people don't understand my issues. So like, I find it interesting that you do talk about finance. So where did you like start bringing these like financial discussions into your like everyday, I guess, language?
Over the last 3 roles, I reckon.
Yep.
I've had to be better at financial management than I am at, you know, people and task and resource management, because it can significantly impact your ability to A, deliver, and B, manage risk at the same time. So you've got to know what your funding model is within your organization. So we are, as a regulated organization, we do a regulatory reset, which means we put a business case to the regulator and say, this is what we're going to do in the next 5 years. Here's the reasons why. Here's the risk that's going to lower. And they give you, meet your ask, or they do the debate and you go back and you might lose 20-30% of that ask or whatever. All of us regulated organizations have to do that. And that can be challenging from multiple perspectives, but you have to know how financing works within your organization, how CapEx is treated, how OpEx is treated. Is there a TOTEX view as well? Then you got to know how you're going to deliver your program of work within those boundaries as well. What makes an operational expenditure? What makes a capital expenditure? What's easier in your organization to get funding for? And then building business cases aligned to that. And then it's a dance of then delivering within CapEx and OpEx boundaries as well. So that's been, you know, in the last 2 roles, Naval Group and Naval Group Australia and SA Power Networks, being asset-focused companies, I've had to learn a lot about that. And it's been a great learning because it's given me skills in that piece of communication and knowledge, but it's also been really good for my teams that I've managed, because then I can translate that into their knowledge sets and help them deliver within those boundaries and get that tension out of the room, where a finance business partner might come to us and say, you've written the business case like this, that's an OPEX. You're going for CapEx, that's OPEX. Well, maybe if I can educate the team on writing to their language and in their needs, to the accounting standards needs, then maybe we'll get better outcomes. And generally, over the last 3 years, we have got those better outcomes because we've been able to communicate in the business's language and understand the business process to then get funding, get OPEX uplifts, get lots of additional CapEx where needed based upon risk where we've seen it. But ultimately, you know, dance the dance really well.
And I feel like a lot of cyber people just don't know how to two-step or tango, you know? They're just like, I'm just going to do the thing where I throw my arms up in the air and just all sit in the corner and just like do this repeatedly until eventually they say, can you buy me a drink? It's like, why would I buy you a drink? I'm going to go talk to that guy over there who actually knows how to moonwalk. So like, come on, man. So it matters though, right? Like finance is super important.
It is. And there's also an appreciation and a trust element that you get through those conversations you have with a finance business partner or a CFO. Like, I've taken the effort to understand your world to try and better communicate with you in your language. So you're kind of building trust with them as well. And they can then, hopefully, and this works well with the way I engage, is that you get good feedback back. You get a good level of, hey, that's great. You've tried. Here's how you could be a little bit better. But hey, you tried. You brought your knowledge to the table. I'm going to listen to you educate me a little bit on risk and cybersecurity impacts. And we come to the middle and we have a nice dance and we go away and have a meal together and
break bread.
We enjoy each other's company. We break bread. That's wrong.
Yeah. I always encourage people who are looking to move out of just like, well, because a lot of people come to a crossroads where they say, do I want to continue being an individual contributor? Which I guess like in cybersecurity, we don't really use the term IC and EM, but in software engineering, we say individual contributor and engineering manager.
Okay.
And they're both like distinct career paths. So, and you can basically get to a point where you just transition laterally to like level zero manager, where people don't like being called level zero managers, but they are.
Yeah.
Or you can keep being better at whatever technical discipline you want to be in.
Yep.
And I say that when you want to go to start over here, you should just like honestly sit down through a GAI CD or equivalent and just figure out how the hell does money work.
Yep.
And just go make friends with people like project managers, TPOs, go just non-cyber people, get out of the cyberspace. Like, it seriously does come back to dollars. It does come back to headcount. These are conversations that you, if you want to have a meaningful conversation with a business leader, they're going to look at the spreadsheet, the line items and the associated business outcomes and make decisions off of those.
Yeah.
They're not going to look at the pen test report and say cross-site scripting is worth, you know, this much risk. They're going to say, how much is it going to cost me to eradicate all the problems in here? So,
yeah. Yeah, it's essential. I did my AICD post-grad course. I've done all of that and they were great. And they were also great for procurement, supply chain, legal, and all the other areas that you get out of that as well a very good network. But it's about perspective and understanding the person you're talking to's perspective, what their business outcomes are, their pressures, and how you can either lighten their load a little bit or help them achieve theirs with your program of work.
So shifting away from finance, there's something that you said a lot earlier that I took a note down for, I thought was actually quite kind of interesting. Is that you said to early on you followed people and now you follow problems. And I pretty much in people's careers, I find that they usually start by following money and then following people that they want to work with and can learn from, and then eventually following problems that they want to go and tackle because they're just that's what's interesting to them.
Awesome.
Did you find that your career kind of followed that trajectory as well?
Yeah, again, I'm pretty standard. Yeah, you get to a point in life where you become a parent and you realize that money isn't everything. Yep, it supports great things, but you kind of feel like, oh, I am now watching another person grow up and money isn't the majority of their problems. It's no problems. There are other big problems in the world, and solving problems is a skill set as well. But yeah, I would say that's probably the progression. I think as you mature as a high performer, that money is second to getting some internal positivity out of what you're doing is really important, or else why are you doing it? Because the money now is enough.
Yeah.
It's enough. We live in Australia. We are a very lucky country. I'm even luckier in South Australia. 10 minutes from work, my kids walk back and forth to school. Really lucky, we're safe. I'm in a really good career. My path is really good. I work with great people. I have great friends around me. Okay, be appreciative of all of that. But if you're gonna spend 9 hours a day doing something, make sure it's for the right purpose.
Yeah, and I think that intrinsic motivation is just always going to trump extrinsic, because like there's going to be a point where like you do pick up your daughter and then you disappear for a conference and you come back and she's doing something because that's happened to me. I've gone traveled somewhere, I can't remember what, I think it was CyberCon Canberra, I came back and she just looked a lot bigger. And I'm just saying, like, so I just kind of missed 3 days of her just growth spurting or something, right? Like, you get perspective as you get a little bit older. And I love my kids and I want to have them, like, let them have a good life. So to me, like, money enables that and it's important. But I know that once I get to a point where I have that stability and that, like, my kids are, you know, looked after and that my wife can choose to do what kind of career she's interested in, I'm going to be, like, smashing myself hard at things, like, problems I really care about.
Those incidents you talk about, like, I think we've all had them and they give us good perspective when we make choice. I did a stint over in the Middle East when I was at EY and I missed a Father's Day. To me, well, it's my Father's Day. It didn't matter to me. But when I heard it from my son's mouth saying, I was supposed to celebrate you on Sunday and you weren't here. Like, that hurts.
Yeah.
That gets you a little bit and you're like, okay, I'll make a different choice next time, I think. So again, when you move to an organization, when you're solving good problems, but they're also supportive of where you want to be as a human being, then you start kind of thinking about, all right, second to purpose and mission and organization is the people I'm with. Does my chief digital officer, as Chris is right now, he is incredibly supportive of family. Your family's first, and he knows that he will employ good people with good values if he supports that. So if I say I'm not coming in today because my son's sick, all good, see you tomorrow. And that kind of thing is like, all right, that's where I want to be because I have to prioritize family because money, organization, fame, and glory don't mean anything to them.
Yep.
They just want their dad, their mum to be around when they need them and they want their questions answered. And that's what makes them happy as people. So that's what we should be doing.
I know that, like, sometimes my daughter, like, tells me, hey, I'd love to play more Minecraft with you, but, you know, I know that you've got to work tonight. And I sit there and think to myself, I've taken on too much work over the Christmas break. So I'm trying to be incredibly intentional about having sacred, because early on when you start a business, you can just, like, just fill up your time. There's unlimited demand for cyber stuff, right? Like, even if you're kind of mediocre, if you just hit enough phones, I guarantee you have a full pipeline for a year, right?
Yep.
And it's that pipeline, like, it can be very enticing to just look at, yeah, you know what, nights are good, so are weekends. And then you come back a year later and you're like, well, my wife divorced me and, like, my two kids don't know who I am anymore because all they know is I go into the office and disappear for 16 hours.
Yeah.
Like, in my personal life, like, my dad did overtime constantly. He was a truck driver. He'd get up at 3 a.m. in the morning,
yep,
and he would drive linen between hospitals, which I think is a very,
okay,
very important thing to do. And if people belittle that career choice, they can go away.
No.
We need those people.
Yes.
And so he did this, you know, 6 days a week, and he did overtime, so he'd do it every other shifts and stuff. But the fact is the unsociable working hours and the fact that it had to do overtime a lot of time meant that I didn't get as much FaceTime with my dad as I liked. And so that's really impacted me nowadays because I don't have as solid a relationship with my father as, you know, I know other people do with their kids.
Oh.
And, like, my mother's not around anymore, but I was really close with her. And I hope to have that same bond that I had with my mom that my kids can have with me.
Yeah.
But I know that that's only going to happen if I can be a present dad.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you've got to make purposeful change that supports your personal wants. So that is choices. Geez, that'd be a fun conference to go to. Oh, three of my mates are going. Oh, but we've got, and this is legitimately why I didn't go to ACE in Melbourne. Mm. I had my daughter's calisthenics main night of the year where, you know, she managed to win third place in the state, whatever they are, state championships for her division.
That's great. Congrats.
I went to that and I saw that and I didn't go to ACE in Melbourne despite 55 signal messages of all the fun that they were having, which, yes, that's fun. That would have been fun. I would have had fun with that, but I probably would have missed a critical point with my kids. So purposeful choices, they're there for a reason.
And there's always more high school reunions we can go to anyway, right? Because that's what most of the cyber cons are.
Yeah, there'll be another conference.
Like, I did similar this year. I missed ACER Melbourne because my wife got sick. And I didn't want to take a chance of being in another state and have her, like, crook in case we needed to look after the, you know, baby. So I think that was the right decision, even though she recovered pretty quickly.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I also got lots of signal messages from people being like, where are you?
Yep.
It's all good.
It's fine.
We have to make the choices that we do.
Yeah, and I also don't want to not be included in all those messages because I want to see the fun they're all having because
yeah,
it's also nice to just see it. It's like, oh, it's still a great thing. You're still engaging with each other. You also don't need me there.
And you can always catch up with other people, give them a phone call. I feel like people think it's only at conferences that you can meet people. But if you just travel for work somewhere, or you just like, just get send someone a text you haven't spoken to in a long time and see how they're going, I reckon it'd be a lot of people that would just love to hear from each other. So
yeah, correct.
Here we go to the big hug podcast, where you just tell everybody, love each other like you love your mum.
Just we're a community. Be nice to each other. Be kind. Don't be negative in the comments.
All right. Well, maybe we'll be negative about the fast round questions.
Yeah. All right. Let's go.
Christmas present to give to someone that you work with.
All right. So I've got three people at work who genuinely like good wine. So I am going to purposefully find three wines that they have not drunk. They don't have to be expensive, that I have enjoyed, and say, I've chosen this for you and your palate and what you've heard. So again, something that they would enjoy, but shows that you took the time to think about them.
My friend, Jeff Campy, up this way, he runs a digital forensics firm for expert witness stuff. And in his spare time, he runs a wine thing.
Yeah.
Where it is an excuse. It's a Twitch stream where he just drinks wine and talks about all the wine stuff. And my wine ability is basically, there's a lot of wine. The wine is colored red. And the...
It should go with foods that are red.
This tastes bitter. I'm not a particularly good connoisseur of it, as opposed to coffee. Mm. But you should have a chat to him sometime. He would love to talk to you about why he's...
I will, actually. I'm going to find his Twitch stream. Is that like
And he's, what do you call it? He's a local... he's a Hunter Valley, so that's where we're at. If you know Hunter Valley wines, he knows all of them. So there you go. You can get some from this way.
Yeah, oh, wonderful.
Cool.
Yeah, well, maybe we can do a collab Twitch where I talk about Barossa Valley and Clare and McLaren.
Mate, he would love that.
Great South Australian things.
There we go. So we're going to get a cyber wine podcast happening next. So
yes, cy wine.
Cy wine, done. All right. So next one would be, what's your most recent audiobook and why?
I am currently reading Netflix's Listening to Netflix's No Rules Rules. I'm really enjoying that for challenging the normal governance processes that organizations put in place to deal with one minority to fix the majority rather than just dealing with the minority. I really like this concept that I'm hearing. And then before that, because I just started that, it was Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey, which was just a good laugh because he's a great storyteller. And I really enjoyed some of his personal reflections on his life and choices in that too.
Was it Reed Hastings who did No Rules Rules?
You are correct.
Oh,
well done.
Oh, look at me. I know something. So, yeah. I mean, I go to a lot of places where bureaucracy exists because they have too many edge cases. And it's always just like, well, how about you just apply for most and then deal with the edge cases with just manual boring processes. Don't worry about having to try to account for everything everywhere. And then... they're like, wow, look at this. It's functional now. We have a business that works. Crazy. So,
Yeah. Yeah. And the expense of it, Netflix have been really good at showing the expense of governance controls for sake of it. Anyway. Yep, that's it. This is supposed to be quick fire.
Yep. And last one would be, where's the best place to eat food in Adelaide?
But that is a epically long question. But at the moment, I thoroughly enjoy a steak from Arky, which is a place on Norwood Parade. Big coal grill right in the middle of the restaurant, lovely bar around it, really good food, really good wood-fired, taste-driven, meaty, hearty food, really delicate flavors around it to balance them out. And I'm guessing you asked this question because you know I like my food.
Well, I figured if you like wine, you're going to probably like food as well, mate. So
yeah. There's also my food blog hustle, but that's another podcast.
Oh wait, when you do that, just feel free to send it to me. We can link it in the show notes so people can go and listen to yours.
All right.
I was in Adelaide yesterday. I went to this place called Peel Street, and I just walked down there and just walked into it, and I was just like, hello, I would like food, and they're like, what? So then I just ordered a bunch of stuff, and I was just like, wow. Watermelon with halloumi. I've never had this before.
Yes.
This is amazing. Yes. So, highly recommend.
And Peel Street's one of those Adelaide institutions. It's one of those restaurants that in most of smaller cities, if you can survive greater than 5 years, you're an institution. And that Peel Street, other places like Bread and Bone and George's on Weymouth and Proof Little Bar. These are places and press as well, like the institutions now, because they've survived and they just do great food, Australian driven food. Yeah.
I went to Little Pub as well. So if I,
not too bad.
Yeah. Just had a lot of, I wouldn't say the Indian ads are any good, but I'd definitely have the beer. So all craft beers.
Yeah. Good variety of beer. Don't do a bad steak either for that particular environment either.
I also noticed that your glass that you got on camera is a whiskey tasting glass, I believe. Norco?
It's all of the above. If it's water, if it's whiskey, if it's coffee. All at once sometimes.
Oh, you play King's Cup too, I see. Oh, dear. Well, mate, look, Nathan, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. Is there anything you'd like to say before we wrap up?
Look, I know, I appreciate you asking and having this conversation with me. I've enjoyed our conversations. I've enjoyed the tangents we've gone down around purposeful choices and having a great mindset and bringing family to the forefront as well. In this day and age, it's hard to do, but it's really important. So thank you.
Oh, no worries. All right. Thank you so much, Nathan. Have a good one.
Thanks, Cobb.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Secured. If you got any feedback at all, feel free to hit us up and let us know. If you'd like to learn more about how Galah Cyber can help keep your business secured, go to galahcyber.com.au. If you're new to the show or a seasoned veteran, I want to hear from you. I'm always looking to do better as a podcast host and as a person. So tell me about what I can do better. Tell me about the types of people you want on my podcast. Tell me about if the format's working for you or styles need to be switched up. Do I need to interview differently? So on and so forth. I appreciate you sticking with me for almost 30 episodes at this stage. And I hope I can keep learning and you can keep learning and being entertained for many more episodes to come. So please shoot me feedback. I want the good, the bad, and the ugly to pod@galahcyber.com.au. And if you don't like email, hit me up on LinkedIn.